Gardek and his partners made it to the shack without anyone suffering additional injury. The last one through the door, Eilish found a bar and shoved it into place. Colby and Milo lowered Gardek to the floor to sit, with his back against the wall, and the alchemist scrambled to secure the rear exit. The dark woman grabbed some oily rags and started knotting them around the Trollkin's bloody leg.
In retrospect, Gwyn might have had a point. Perhaps we should have deferred further investigation until we were completely recovered from our previous fiasco.
Too rough for you, schoolboy?
What were those two-headed dogs?
Argus. Very dangerous and rarely tamed outside Kador. They're difficult to train and prone to attacking their masters.
I thought they lost their paralyzing bark when raised in captivity.
That's true. These are probably still wild. I can't believe some maniac has a pack of them just to guard a junkyard.
Was anybody able to tell how many there were?
Their collective silence as they looked around at the others was answer enough. The darkness and general confusion had prevented an accurate counting.
I couldn't either. But plainly, they're enough to give us problems. We need help.
We're in an uninhabited part of the Undercity, and we didn't tell anyone we were coming here. I wouldn't look for rescue anytime soon.
Colby knotted a final bandage and stood up.
The help I mean is already here.
She gestured to the armless derelict Steamjack in the corner.
If you can get it running.
With time and some help, there's a chance.
Just then, something jolted the frame of the door. No hound had done that. The tunnel killer had arrived. Perhaps he'd been nearby, and the pack's barking had drawn him back. Eilish turned to Colby.
You don't have time.
We can barricade the doors.
Have you noticed how rotted out and generally dilapidated this place is? If he has to, he can knock down a wall.
We need to distract him. Milo, I'm ready for your bruise. Anything that'll keep me on my feet.
The alchemist walked over to the Trollkin and extracted several vials from some of his many pockets. Gardek gulped down two and clenched his jaw.
Are you all right?
Fine. Is there more?
Milo proffered it. Eilish took the vial from the man's hand.
This one's mine. You can't go out there by yourself.
The bitter draft stood him up straight, quivering with energy. It also made his face hot and set his heart thumping. Gardek clambered to his feet.
Ready?
I'd better be, hadn't I?
Out the back then and circle round. Maybe we can take him by surprise.
Milo accompanied them to the exit. They stepped through, and he hastily pulled it shut after them. Eilish had barely cleared the threshold when an Argus emitted its bark. The Arcanist staggered, and his heart jolted in his chest. Intent on killing him while he recovered from the sonic blast, the Argus sprang down at him from atop a pile of scrap. Gardek lunged and swung his warhammer. The weapon caught the beast in midair and smashed it to the ground. It dazedly tried to rise, and the bounty hunter hit it a second time, and a part of its back indented. The Argus twitched and eventually stopped moving.
All right, that's two dead.
It's a start.
Just then, Eilish realized that one of the creatures likely heard the commotion at the rear of the shed and was now rushing alongside the tumble-down structure to investigate. Gardek took a fresh grip on his hammer. Eilish raised his right hand to cast another spell. Then the new threat hurtled around the corner, and despite himself, the Arcanist faltered. In some respects, the tunnel killer was what Eilish had expected. It was big, even bigger than Gardek or Natak, and wore a crudely fashioned mantle of hide that reeked of the tanner's vat. The steel rings on each of its massive fingers glinted in the lantern light. Each of those fingers ended in a long claw that, Eilish realized with a twinge of chagrin, had produced the wounds he'd erroneously attributed to a peculiar hooked blade. The cloaked figure was shaggy and bestial. Its arms were too long, its hands were too large, and its legs bent backward below the knee like the rear legs of a wolf. Tusks, like a boar's, curved up the sides of its face. It was definitely not an Ogryn. In fact, it was a Gorax. Once used as beasts of war, the hulking creatures were infamous for their savagery. This one instantly charged. His uneven steps betraying the damage to his leg, Gardek interposed himself between the oncoming brute and Eilish and swung his hammer. With startling agility, the Gorax stopped to avoid the blow and then lunged forward to slash with its talons. Gardek retreated, but not far enough. Razor-sharp talons ripped open his cheek while narrowly missing an eye. The Gorax drove forward and swiped again. Gardek jammed the head of his hammer into the beast's chest and shoved. The heave ended the Gorax's initial furious assault, but as far as Eilish could tell, didn't appear to hurt it. The Trollkin needed help. With him and the Gorax in close combat, the trick would be to hit one and not the other. As Eilish began circling to achieve the best line for the purpose, an Argus loped around the corner. The hounds clearly saw the ferocious Gorax as an ally. Eilish jerked backward to avoid the brunt of the bark's effect, while the Argus circled to come at Gardek from behind. His reflexes having saved him from the worst of the disorientation, Eilish gritted his teeth and focused his will. Runes coalesced in the air as he stretched out his hand. Mystical bolts leapt from his fingertips and pierced the Argus, which fell down, thrashing. As Eilish tried to determine how badly the beast was hurt, he heard another Argus coming at him from behind. The Arcanist spun around and backpedaled, straining to muster the power he needed. He was able to maintain concentration on the forming runes. A flare of arcane energy struck the Argus. The beast slid to a stop and then ran for cover. Eilish let it go. Too many spells in quick succession had left him dizzy, his mind aching. The strain of magic was not something Milo's drugs could overcome. As with any exertion, performing magic required intervals of rest, and Eilish had to conserve his energy. Right now, he needed every ounce of it to fend off the two-headed hounds slinking in the shadows as they looked for a good opportunity to attack. Like all natural predators, they preferred not to risk themselves until they could overwhelm their prey. Fortunately for Eilish, they did not know his limits. Gardek would have to contend with the Gorax by himself until Colby's derelict steamjack was ready, assuming it actually could be readied. Even filtered through the shack's walls, the fighting outside rattled Colby and made it difficult to think. Scowling, she struggled to block out the noise. A steam engine needed water. Fortunately, the tinkerer who'd once occupied the shack had kept a tank of it handy. Colby turned the tap and water began splashing into the bucket she'd placed below. The steam engine also needed coal, and there was a bin half full of it. The situation wasn't hopeless. As Milo pulled his wounded arm from its sling and hurried in her direction, she clambered up on a stool to inspect the Jack's torso.
What do you think?
There's no time to open it up and check out the inside. We just have to assume there's no hidden damage that would keep it from working. I'm hoping it was scrapped, only because whoever left it couldn't afford to replace its arms.
All right. We assume that. Now what?
We need to seal the broken pneumatics in the shoulders. Otherwise, we lose pressure.
Colby opened her greatcoat and brought out clamps, plugs, and putty. She showed them to Milo.
Look around for more of these.
The mechanic set to work as fast as she could. By the time she finished with one armhole, Milo was standing ready with the supplies she needed for the other. In short order, she finished with the second.
What now?
We need to scrape off any rust that might inhibit motion, and then lubricate the moving parts.
Right.
Milo uncorked a ceramic jug and passed it up to her. First, she doused the steam engine with the greenish contents, and then she repeated the process on the neck and leg joints. Corrosion foamed away. Afterward, Milo attended newly gleaming valves of brass and copper with the contents of an oil can.
Now, water and coal.
Milo found a hose to facilitate the transfer of the former and a scuttle to aid with the latter. She lit the firebox with a match. After that, she and Milo waited.
This is going to take too long. Gardek and Eilish aren't going to make it. I can make the water boil faster.
Do it.
Milo brought two pewter vials out of his pockets and poured one into the other. He climbed up on the stool, added the mixture to the boiler, and then hopped down again. For a few seconds, nothing happened. Colby took a step backward, a reflexive gesture that would do nothing to protect her from flying shrapnel and scalding steam should the construct explode. A moment later, the Jack straightened. Its bump of a head swiveled back and forth as its focal lenses surveyed its surroundings. Success. Now Colby had to try to control it. She turned to examine a line of nonsensical words and numbers chalked on the wall beside the labor jack. She hoped it was the control lock code, recorded here by the scrapyard operator for easy reference. She flipped a switch on the automaton's shoulder to put it into receptive mode and read off the cipher. Now she'd find out if there had been any point to all the frantic labor of the past few minutes.
Look at me.
The dusty lenses turned in her direction.
Your name is... Doorstop. You will obey me. Lift your foot if you understand.
Doorstop picked up its foot and set it down again.
Good.
She looked at Milo, who drew a throwing knife from its sheath.
Let's finish this.
Milo knew that Gardek and Eilish had intended to circle around the shack and take the tunnel killer by surprise, but the subsequent sounds of battle indicated they'd never made it that far. The murderer had left off pounding on the front door to help the Argus kill them. Colby hastily reloaded the slug gun and then pointed at the rear exit.
Doorstop, outside! Quickly!
The armless Jack tramped in that direction with the two humans scurrying behind. It didn't wait for anyone to open the door. Without breaking stride, it smashed right through the panel before coming to a halt. Looking past the automaton, Milo spied Gardek fighting the tunnel killer, if it could still be called fighting. The Trollkin had lost his hammer and was reeling backward with hands raised in pure defense. The murderer followed, slashing not with some exotic hooked blade, but with its claws. Milo caught his breath when he glimpsed the snarling, tusked face under the cowl. The thing he and his partners had been hunting wasn't human, undead, or Trollkin, or Ogryn. It was a frenzied, bipedal beast so intent on its foe that it didn't even notice Doorstop crashing onto the scene. Fortunately for Eilish, the remaining Argus did notice. His cape tattered and his short sword in his hand, the Arcanist was on the ground where a pair of the two-headed hounds had evidently thrown him. One beast had a crumpled black greave in one of its jaws. Eilish had likely been an instant away from death. Now, however, startled by the chugging Doorstop, both Argus drew warily back. Colby scrambled out next to the steam jack.
Doorstop! Push the Gorax!
She pointed at the raging beast man to specify the machine's target.
Keep pushing until you knock it down!
The laborjack marched dutifully forward. As Doorstop began to head away from Eilish, the pair of Argus that had been assailing the fallen Arcanist stopped retreating. Milo and Colby dashed to his side. Milo drew a knife and threw it in a long cast. The tip of the blade struck an Argus's withers, piercing its hide, but not deep enough to stick. The hound faltered as the weapon fell to the ground. Though the injury was superficial, the unexpected attack balked the beast long enough for Colby to reach Eilish and haul him to his feet. Still facing the Argus, the two of them backed away toward Doorstop, weapons ready. Milo pulled another knife to cover their retreat. Gardek's wounded leg had gone numb, and that made every step treacherous. Stumbling back before the Gorax's onslaught, he eventually lost his balance and fell. Gardek tried to raise his arms to fend off the creature, but they also felt clumsy and heavy, as if the weight of his own armor was too much for him. Then, smoke fuming from the smokestack on its back, the armless laborjack ran right into the Gorax. Its momentum and mass were irresistible, and the machine bowled the creature away from its intended victim. Gardek watched in astonishment. Like his foe, he'd been so intent on their fight that he hadn't even noticed the jack emerge from the shack. The Trollkin hoped the automaton would knock the Gorax over and crush it underfoot, but it didn't. The beast was too fast, big, and strong. It slashed repeatedly as the jack pushed it backward. Its claws tore through the metal on the machine's chassis, but did not slow its advance. The Gorax and the labor jack were roughly the same height, but the jack considerably outweighed its opponent. The Gorax seemed to comprehend it wasn't facing a living thing, and that its attacks weren't having the desired effect. It backed up a few paces and then moved to circle around the laborjack, likely in an attempt to get at the softer targets behind the machine. Doorstop tried to counter by putting its ponderous bulk in the path of its foe, but it was too slow to truly impede the Gorax. Gardek struggled to his feet and hobbled forward. Seeing him stand up, the Gorax sprinted forward, outmaneuvering the steamjack with feral grace. The Trollkin began casting about for his hammer. Then Eilish and Colby rushed to stand between them, the former gripping his sword and the latter a heavy jack wrench. Milo hovered a couple of paces back, a knife raised for throwing. Their sudden arrival distracted the Gorax, which turned to deal with them instead. Colby glanced back at Gardek.
Get your hammer!
The bounty hunter resumed his search, trying to locate the hammer in the gloom. He finally spotted it several yards away. As he neared it, another Argus bark penetrated his skull. Gardek saw the creature hurtling out of the gloom at him. This time he managed to overcome the paralysis and lunged forward to reach the hammer an instant before the Argus could close. He snatched the weapon off the ground, pivoted, and struck. His numb leg almost gave way, but Gardek's blow landed, striking the Argus where its two necks met and merged into a single spine. And the beast collapsed. As fast as he could, he hobbled back toward his allies. He was relieved to see that not only were all three of them still alive, but they had also managed to hurt the Gorax a little. Eilish's sword had struck a bloody gash on its forearm, and one of Milo's acid flasks had burned away fur from its shoulder. Blistered skin still smoked from the caustic substance. Just as Gardek moved up beside Eilish, the Jack knocked the Gorax off balance. Pivoting, the Gorax moved to circumvent the steam jack as it had every time before. Then Eilish lunged and drove his short sword into the beast's leg, staggering it for one crucial moment.
Doorstop! Fall on the Gorax!
The jack toppled forward on top of the beast man, using its steam-powered legs to keep the creature from crawling out from under its crushing weight. Gardek limped to the proper position, raised his hammer high. Dunia, had it ever felt this heavy, even on the first day of his training? And anticipated its wriggling head coming his way. As soon as it did, he struck. The Gorax spotted the movement and lashed a claw sideways at him. The force he invested in his swing unbalanced him, and his leg finally gave way to dump him on the ground. But the Gorax's talons didn't land. He looked at his foe and saw that his blow had struck first, smashing the creature's skull. It slumped and was still. For a moment, he felt tremendous satisfaction and the urge to rest. Then he noticed that the surviving Argus were still slinking and circling in the darkness.
They're afraid of the noise of the labor jack. But that won't last now that it's fallen over.
Eilish looked at Gardek.
You're the strong one. Can you help set it back on its feet?
With my leg torn up?
I'm wiped out. I need time to recover before I can do anything.
Don't worry about it.
Colby aimed her slug gun, steadying its weight in both hands.
You realize we've yet to see you hit a target with that thing.
It helps if the target is big and stationary.
The weapon slug arced across the junkyard to smash into one of the towering piles of scrap. Combined with their earlier losses, the pelting of junk was apparently more than the surviving canines could take. They withdrew into the gloom. Gardek's allies clustered around him. Colby stooped to examine his leg, and Milo handed her a little brass bottle.
Apply this.
Whatever the stuff was, it stung some feeling back into Gardek's leg.
How badly is he hurt?
I'll be fine, schoolboy. I'm not dying now. Not after we finally won a fight. Not when I can point out how wrong you were about the hooked dagger.
And not, I'm sure, when we're finally ready to unmask the real tunnel murderer. I trust you've all discerned who it has to be.
As they approached the Queen of Skulls, Eilish glanced surreptitiously at Gardek limping along. He didn't want the Trollkin to notice he was checking up on him. Fortunately, he appeared to be all right. A grim smile on his bandaged face, Gardek looked as eager as everyone else to reach their destination. Eilish knew Trollkin were quick healers. He'd likely be fine as soon as he got a real meal. A glowering Lieutenant Rourke, however, evinced more impatience than eagerness. Eilish and his partners had collected the lawmen on their way to report to Lon Kurgan, and Rourke was clearly irritated they had declined to divulge the results of their investigation immediately. For Eilish's purposes, that simply wouldn't do. He preferred to reveal the solution to their puzzle with all the principals gathered together and with a certain theatrical panache. It was more fun, and it would help to build his reputation. Besides, even though Rourke had recruited Colby and him, Kurgan was paying their fee. He had a right to hear the information first. Colby had to leave Doorstop outside the gambling house, as it was too big to fit through the entrance. Even without arms, the smoking, chugging steam jack made the thuggish doorman look small and inconsequential by comparison. Passing through the card room, the group spied Kurgan talking to Peter Nazarko by one row of the animal enclosures that lined the hall containing the fighting pit. The Queen of Skulls' manager sported a crimson brocade outfit every bit as gaudy as the mustard-colored suit Eilish had seen before. His scowling and bald second-in-command wore his usual long leather gauntlets and carried his crook-handled, spiral-carved cane.
Is he done?
Almost. Here's the first part.
Gardek opened the sack he was carrying and pulled out the Gorax's head by its shaggy mane. Kurgan and Rourke goggled at the head.
That's an animal.
Specifically, a Gorax. A ferocious creature, as my partners and I can attest. I wonder, who has the connections to procure such an animal in a pack of wild Argus? Who possesses the near preternatural skill to train the former to do his bidding and to convince such fierce and normally territorial beasts to cohabitate and defend one another? Care to speculate, Mr. Nazarko?
Eilish had to give the beast trainer credit. At the implied accusation, his mouth fell open in a convincing counterfeit of surprise.
What are you suggesting?
In retrospect, the clues all fit together. You found an abandoned site in the Undercity where you could keep a Gorax. You obtained an Argus pack to play watchdogs. Then you trained the lumbering brute to roam the tunnels and kill patrons departing the Queen of Skulls, although its bloodthirsty temperament caused it to claim the occasional random victim as well.
That's ridiculous. The Gorax would have no way of telling the patrons from anybody else.
Not without help, but you provided it. You're quite sour and taciturn in your dealings with Mr. Kurgan and people in general, aren't you? But when gamblers approach you, you're genial and more than willing to shake their hands and slap them on the back, because you're putting a chemical on them that people can't smell, but a Gorax can.
One arm hanging in its sling, Milo grinned.
I helped figure out that part of it.
Eilish gave the alchemist a nod.
So you did.
He shifted his gaze back to Nazarko.
You didn't want anyone finding out the Tunner Killer was a Gorax, because that might implicate you. Besides, a mysterious slayer was more frightening. So you improvised a crude disguise using unfinished tanner skins. Their stink would both terrify and repel any witnesses, as well as mask the distinctive musk of a Gorax. You even put steel rings on the creature's fingers to misdirect us to Nahtok Warbiter of the Patient Weavers.
Ah, ridiculous!
Still, your faith in your precautions wasn't unshakable. When I first visited this establishment and demonstrated that Mr. Boggs wasn't the Tunnel Killer, my acumen dismayed you.
I suspect it was the prospect of all four of us working together that spooked him.
Yes, I'm sure. At any rate, fearing discovery and hoping our investigation would lead us to Nahtok, Mr. Nazarko sent an anonymous message to the Patient Weavers. It was supposed to result in our demise, but as you can see, we weathered the crisis, just as we subsequently found your hideaway and put down your sundry savage beasts.
This is insane. Why would I want to kill our customers?
For one thing, you're second in command here. If business falls off for whatever reason, your knotted cord superiors would probably elevate you to Mr. Kurgan's position. But I suspect there's more to it than that. You're harboring some sort of grudge against him, aren't you?
Are you?
No. He's just stringing together lies and guesses. There's no proof of any of this. I bet we can find some. The chemical you smear on the gamblers, have you got it in your pocket right now?
Even if he doesn't, the hides he stole were bulky, awkward to carry, and acidic. We might find a burn or two on those gloves.
With a suddenness that took them by surprise, Nazarko gripped his cane with both hands and pulled. The crook handle came away from the shaft to reveal the stubby barrel of a pistol. The bald man pointed the gun at Kurgan and then shifted around behind him.
You ungrateful bastard.
Hardly. When I agreed to work here, you promised this fighting pit would be just the first of many. That we'd invest in more exotic beasts, and I'd be able to run things the way I wanted to. You never delivered on any of it.
You're crazy. You'd have nothing without me.
We're leaving. Nobody move.
Keeping his captive's body between him and his accusers, Nazarko dragged Kurgan toward the exit.
You can't get away.
We'll see about that.
Nazarko grabbed the lever attached to the barred door at the front of an enclosure. Perhaps the beasts inside were supposed to fight soon, for unlike the others down the wall, no padlock secured it. Nazarko yanked down the lever and jerked open the grill. Shaggy, long-eared burrow moths hurtled through the opening. Bumping into one another, gamblers recoiled from the gnashing fangs and hooked claws of the shrilling, dog-sized animals. With the fighting pit at their backs, however, the patrons couldn't avoid the burrow mogs for long. Fortunately, there was enough time for Colby's companions to intervene. Eilish evoked a spell, and blue runes flashed around his extended arm. Bolts of force pierced the lead burrow mog, which promptly collapsed. Its sudden demise made the creatures behind it hesitate just long enough for Gardek to plant himself in front of them. The Trollkin's shield, spiked armor, and massive frame made a barrier of sorts, and his hammer rose and fell as he smashed one animal after another. Milo maneuvered until he could throw a grenade into the very back of the burrow mog's enclosure. The resulting burst of gas made the beasts at the rear of the frenzied pack convulse. Gardek was far enough away to be unaffected. Confident her partners had the burrow mog part of the situation in hand, Colby scrambled after Nazarko. Weaving through the panicked crowd slowed her progress, and by the time she reached the card room, the animal trainer was already at the exit. As she'd expected, he was still pulling his hostage along. Keeping Kurgan under control had slowed him just enough. She waited for Nazarko to throw open the door.
Doorstop! Come!
The laborjack heard her despite the general racket inside the gaming house. It turned and tramped toward the doorway, its massive legs and torso blocking any view of the cavern beyond. Had he reacted quickly, Nazarko could have let go of Kurgan and dodged around the oncoming jack. Instead, taking advantage of the distraction, Kurgan wrenched free and punched the animal trainer in the throat. Nazarko reeled. He tried to point the pistol, but Kurgan grabbed the stubby barrel. The gang chieftain twisted the weapon away from himself and toward the other man. Teeth gritted and eyes glaring, the two men strained for control of the gun. Wrench raised to brain Nazarko, Colby dashed toward them. But when she was still a stride out of striking distance, the pistol went off. Nazarko dropped with a little hole at the spot where his neck met his chin. The wound would shortly be the death of him if it hadn't been already. Just in case, however, Kurgan stamped on his head and neck and then sneered at Colby. She turned toward the doorway. The Queen of Skulls was more solidly built than the shack in the junkyard, and Doorstop hadn't succeeded in forcing its way through. But the Jack's dogged efforts to do so were no doubt producing cosmetic damage at the very least.
Doorstop, stop! Move 5 steps back!
The machine obeyed, and she and Kurgan headed back into the fighting hall. They arrived just in time to see Gardek flatten the skull of the final burrow mog. As far as Colby could see, the bounty hunter and her other partners were unharmed, and so were the people they'd fought to protect.
Nazarko?
Taken care of. Which means Mr. Kurgan owes us our fee.
I made plenty of coin off those burrow mogs, and Nazarko won't be easy to replace, but yes, I'll pay you. You earned it. You earn more. I invite you to join the knotted cord.
Miss Sterling already has a plan for her future that I endorse. She intends to establish a mercenary company. No doubt Mr. Garrity, Mr. Stonebreaker, and Mr. Boggs will be her first recruits. They plainly work well together.
Colby turned to the others.
I was going to ask you once I knew the lieutenant would help me secure a charter.
As long as I have time for my work. And you buy me a lab.
A bigger team means bigger jobs. And bigger jobs means bigger bounties. I'll give it a try.
I wouldn't mind having some brute force backing me up on those occasions when intellect alone proves insufficient. Though I require to be named your second in command.
Gardek glared at the Arcanist, but then shrugged. Colby suspected the Trollkin would do what he wanted, regardless of who gave him orders. Kurgan gave Rourke a crooked smile.
And you won't mind having your own little band of mercenaries beholden to you.
Every action I take is for the good of the citizens of Corvus.
Rourke turned to Colby.
So, long live... What's the name on the application?
The Black River Irregulars.
Eilish tilted his head.
Not bad. I can live with it.
The Black River Irregulars, Murder in Corvus, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2014, Privateer Press, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the publisher. Production copyright 2018, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terrence Aselford as narrator, Alejandro Ruiz as Milo Boggs, Scott McCormick as Gardek Stonebrow, Bradley Smith as Eilish Garrity, Joy Jones as Colby Sterling, Richard Rowan as Lon Kurgan, David Jordan as Peter Nazarko, Yasmin Toison as Canis Gormley, Zeke Elton as Natak Warbiter, and Michael John Casey as Lieutenant Rourke. With Ken Jackson, Colleen Delaney, Nathaniel Perry, Eric Messner, Nanette Savard, Rose Elizabeth Supan, and Mort Shelby. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Black River Irregulars, Murder in Corvus, be sure to look for the Iron Kingdoms anthology, Wicked Ways, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. And remember to check out the Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP, available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from GraphicAudio.net. At GraphicAudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. And be sure to listen to our new free Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP, featuring all new serialized episodes of a complete full-length story, along with episodes that feature short stories in our graphic audio format. Once you do, we're confident you'll want to subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can subscribe to GASP through Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Coming this fall, look for Graphic Audio Streams, our new streaming subscription service. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.